Good morning. This is Berta reading the commercial news for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Eads Eatery opens Monday on Voorhees by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. Another restaurant from a family that already has three other restaurants in Vermilion and Champaign counties will be opening on Monday. Ella's Eatery will open in the former Wendy's restaurant site at 1111 East Voorhees Street. Hours will be 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lindy Aldi is opening the restaurant. Aldi is the son-in-law of Rich Emery. The family owns the restaurants Rich Deluxe Restaurant in downtown Danville and Rich's Family Restaurant in Tilton and Ogden. Aldi and brother-in-law have been running the Ogden restaurant for 7 years. The new Danville restaurant is named after Adi's daughter, Ella. It will have the same menu like Ogden and the others with a different name, Adi said. There will be breakfast, lunch, and also dinner plates, he said. He said they will have daily specials as well. Indoor dining will start with limited capacity according to Illinois' COVID-19 guidelines. We'll try to do our best to keep distance and keep people safe, he said. They will also have online and phone ordering for pickup. Adi said they will have a soft opening only for family members and some of their invited guests this weekend. He said they decided to come up with this restaurant and try this location since there's limited restaurants on that side of Danville. There are also factories, other businesses, and residential neighborhoods in that area, he said, about wanting to serve that part of the city. We thought the area of Danville needs one, he said, of another family-style restaurant. Virtual Inventions, Camp Encourages Children to Create, by Carol Rome, Danville. More than 150 youngsters from Danville's elementary schools are exploring the principles of flight, designing their own sports facilities, and protecting ecosystems this week. These activities and many more are part of the week-long Camp Invention, a summer enrichment program that inspires creativity and inventive thinking in children entering first through sixth grade. Using hands-on activities and online collaboration, Camp Invention promotes science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM, learning. Builds confidence, leadership, perseverance, resourcefulness, and problem-solving skills, and encourages entrepreneurship. Invention is the purpose of the camp, which is being offered for the seventh year for Danville District 118 students, and emphasizes engineering and entrepreneurism. The theme of this year's camp is Elevate. Camp Invention usually takes place in person each summer at one of District 118's elementary schools. But this year, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the program is taking place virtually at each participant's home. Each camper has been receiving big boxes filled with all of the materials needed to participate in the camp's four modules, Camp Director Lori Wood, a Danville High School math teacher, said. We have eight coaches who have a group of 18 to 20 kids. They lead a Zoom meeting every morning to touch base with the kids and go over the different module, she explained. Patty Juarez, one of the team coaches, was checking in Wednesday morning with two of her campers, seventh grader Alma Bergman Guzman and fifth grader Eva Harper, about their progress on creating a glowing flower using an LED battery as a power source. They check in with me and they can see what each other is working on, Juarez said, as she sat at a laptop computer at her kitchen table. This is our third invention. Alma said she was having a difficult time getting her faux flowers to light up, but Eva was able to see what the problem was during the Zoom meeting and offer Alma suggestions. We try to work it out, Juarez said. Juarez encouraged Alma, telling her that she herself had trouble figuring out how to get the flower to light up. Eva admitted she didn't follow the instructions that came with the kit and wired her battery differently to get her flower to light. It's your creation, Juarez told Alma. You can do it however you want as long as you get it to work. Juarez said the team members also can reuse supplies from previous day's inventions. Alma said her favorite invention so far this week was making a game controller from clay. Eva said she loved making a robot from magnets, clay pipe cleaners, and popsicle sticks. The end result was a robot that cleans up using magnets. This year's curriculum also featured video challenges from National Inventors Hall of Fame inductees, encouraging children to be confident in their ideas and explore their ability to innovate. There also are daily challenges to motivate children to go outdoors, get active, and stretch their imagination. They enjoy that everything comes in a box, Juarez said of the multiple boxes filled with fun experiments that were delivered to each camper's home. In the boxes, they give directions on how to do a project, but they can also watch a step-by-step video on YouTube. The YouTube videos walk them through it, she said. It shows them exactly how their project is supposed to look. Juarez's children, 10-year-old Alex and 8-year-old Aniston, also are participating in Camp Invention. To inspire them for Wednesday's Glowing Flower Project, the family took a field trip Tuesday afternoon to the Vermilion County Wetland Boardwalk. We did something to get their imagination going because we were going to work on a nature project today, Juarez said. Aniston excitedly talked about the excursion. We saw some deer in the water, a dead fish, a turtle, and a heron. The activities offered during the week-long camp include Camp Invention Flight Lab, Imagination Soar, as children learn about flight with their gliders, rockets, and handcopters. They build a cityscape from upscale materials, navigate planes through a storm, and take apart a robot. Design Thinking Project. Campers learn the value of their creativity as they bring their biggest ideas to life. To become successful innovators, they create sketches, build prototypes, design logos, and find out how to pitch their invention while protecting their intellectual property. Rescue Squad. Using teamwork and problem-solving skills, children protect the Earth's ecosystem. Inspiring activities include creating pods to complete in zip line races, exploring energy conservation, eliminating pollution, and helping wildlife and habitats across the country. Camp Invention Champions, as they discover the unseen inventions behind their favorite sports, campers apply their own ingenuity. They trade inventor playing cards, create and play their own high-energy hoverball games, and design and build the ultimate sports complex. Camp Invention will wrap up Friday with campers showing off their finished projects to others during a video chat. Candidate seeks looser requirements. Rebecca Anzell, Capital City News. Springfield. A Central Illinois Republican state Senate candidate who does not have enough valid signatures to qualify for the November ballot, asked a federal judge Tuesday to also apply loosened election requirements to him. After the March 17th primary election, Alexander Ruggieri was chosen to fill the Republican Party's nomination vacancy for the 52nd Senate District race. To succeed in qualifying for the general election ballot, where he would challenge incumbent Scott Bennett, a Democrat from Champaign, Ruggieri needed to collect 1,000 voter signatures and submit his petition to the Illinois State Board of Election by June 1. According to his court filing, he gathered 1,152 signatures. After election officials reviewed the validity of those signatures, though, they determined that only 949 were acceptable. That objection threatens to keep Ruggieri from the general election ballot, he argued. Ruggieri in an effort to qualify for the November 3rd election, requested he be looped into an existing court order that applies to third-party candidates for the upcoming election cycle. If a judge signs off, the order would, among other things, lower the threshold of signatures he must collect by 90%, push his filing date to July 20, and allow him to submit electronic signatures. Rebecca Pallmeyer, Chief Judge of the Northern District of Illinois, made that ruling in a lawsuit filed by the Libertarian and Green Parties of Illinois that challenged the constitutionality of the state's election requirements while Governor J.B. Pritzker's stay-at-home and social distancing orders were in effect. A federal appeals court Sunday denied the Illinois State Board of Elections' request to suspend enforcement of Pallmeyer's order. Like the independent and new party candidates in this case, Ruggieri's signature collection has been materially adversely affected by COVID-19 and the pendency of Governor Pritzker's executive order, Ruggieri's attorney, John Fogarty Jr., wrote in a court document filed in the Northern District of Illinois. He added that while Ruggieri's appeal was not filed as an emergency, it presents an emergent issue, as it is anticipated that the Board of Elections will meet on July 20, 2020, at the latest, and that time enter an order as to whether Ruggieri may appear on the general election ballot. Illinois' election code files candidates into two categories: those running under the banner of established parties, typically Democrats and Republicans, and those running as members of the new party, which is Libertarians and Greens, qualify for this election cycle. A Republican running for state Senate, for example, must collect 1,000 signatures to qualify for the party's primary election. If that candidate wins the primary, he or she is automatically included in the general election ballot. In Ruggieri's case, because he is attempting to fill a vacancy, he must gather that same number of signatures and file them with the election board no later than 75 days after the primary election's conclusion. An independent candidate running for that same office is required to gather anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 signatures, according to the election code. Independent and new party candidates are not alone in having to collect petition signatures in COVID-19 affected conditions, Fogarty wrote in a court document. Certain established party candidates, like Ruggieri, are also required to collect petition signatures while under the effects of COVID-19 and the governor's successive stay-at-home orders. His argument centers around the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. Ruggieri contends that he will be prejudiced if a judge denies his request because he will have been required to collect his signatures under the very same conditions as independent and new party candidates. Fogarty characterized Pallmeyer's orders as containing disparately relaxed standards, according to the filing. If a judge decides Ruggieri does not qualify for relief under that order, he will likely not appear on the general election ballot in November. There will be a hearing Friday in Chicago where a judge will rule on his motion. A spokesman for the State Board of Elections said officials do not have any comment on the filing. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Here are the obituaries for June 25th. Robert Leslie Boyer, Jr. Robert Leslie Boyer, Jr. of Mountain Home, Arkansas, passed away June 21st, 2020, in Mountain Home, Arkansas, at the age of 75. Arrangements are by Kirby and Family Funeral and Cremation Service, Mountain Home, Arkansas. Visit an online obituary and guest book at www.kirbyandfamily.com. Albert E. Mose, Albert E. Mose, 78, passed away at 4:50 a.m. on Monday, June 22, 2020, at Lutheran Life Village in Fort Wayne, Indiana. A celebration of Albert's life will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Friday, June 26, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington, Indiana, 420 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday at the funeral home parlor prior to the service. Entombment will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Louise Myers. Louise Jones Myers, age 87, of Williamsport, Indiana, went to be with the Lord at 2:04 a.m. on Wednesday, June 24, 2020, at Rose Walk Village in Lafayette. Visitation will be at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport on Sunday, June 27, 2020, from 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time until service time at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, with Minister Bruce Thornsberg officiating. Interment will follow at West Lebanon Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the West Lebanon Christian Church. Online condolences may be made at www.gradyfuneralhome.com. Tyrone Cunningham. Tyrone Terrell Cunningham, Sr. left our midst on June 16, 2020, a private home-going service that will be live-streamed via Facebook will commence at 12 o'clock p.m. Friday, June 26, 2020, at Leek & Son Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the time of service. A public viewing will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Thursday, June 25, 2020, at the funeral home. Due to COVID-19 regulations, all family members and friends planning to attend viewing are required to practice extreme precaution by wearing a protective mask, gloves, and practicing social distance. Condolences can be sent to www.leekandsonfuneralhome.com. Robert Lynn Pyer. Robert Bob Pyer, age 83, of Catlin, passed away May 16, 2020, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. The Pyer family invites you to a visit/celebration on June 28 from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Assembly, 428 North Walnut, Danville, Illinois. William Griffiths. William Bill Sweet William Richard Griffiths, 97, of Cape Coral, Florida, passed away on June 13, 2020. Burial in Evergreen Memorial Park in Evergreen, Colorado. Carmen Rosalie Rucker Urbana, 92, passed away on June 11, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital. Arrangements were made at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory. Community Briefs, Danville. Work underway. The City of Danville announces improvements to the intersection of Fairchild and Hazel Streets. Hazel Street is closed immediately north and south of the intersection with Fairchild. The project also will involve intermittent lane closures on Fairchild between Vermilion and Jackson. The project is anticipated to be substantially completed by August 17th. For more information, contact Sam Cole, City Engineer, at 431-2384. Registration class. Danville Area Community College is offering commercial refrigeration training from 6 to 9:15 p.m. Wednesdays and Thursdays, July 15th to September 17th, in the DACC Technology Center Room 143. This training, conducted by Frank Wright of Wright Heating and Air, will be hands-on and highly customized to the needs and skills level of its participants. Seating is limited. The cost is $750 per person plus books. WIOA funding is available for those who are eligible. Email syates@dacc.edu or call 217-554-1628. To reserve your seats or inquire about funding opportunities, register at dacc.edu/CCE/CCT/training/registration. DATS meeting. The DATS Technical Committee meeting scheduled for Thursday, July 2nd has been canceled. The DATS Policy Committee meeting is scheduled to take place at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, July 9th in the City Hall Chambers at Robert E. Jones Municipal Building, 17 West Main Street. For information, call Sam Cole at 431-2384. And here's a little baseball news. Manfred admits baseball needs to be better, by Ronald Blum, AP baseball writer. New York. Rob Manfred knows many fans were angered by the financial fight between Major League Baseball and the Players Association during a pandemic. We need to get back on the field, and we need to, in less charged environments, start to have a conversation about how we, and the we in that sentence is the commissioner's office, my staff, the clubs, and the MLBPA, and the players, can do a better job going forward, he said Wednesday during an interview with the Associated Press. We owe it to our fans to be better than we have been for the last 3 months. Spring training was cut short by the novel coronavirus on March 12th. The sides reached an initial agreement on March 26th, which was to have been opening day. That deal called for players to receive prorated salaries, get $170 million in advances, and receive a guarantee of service time in the event no games were played this year. When it became clear that the only way to start the season was to play in empty ballparks, the sides battled publicly over what the agreement meant. Owners said players needed to accept additional cuts and proposed an 82-game schedule starting around the 4th of July. Players argued they shouldn't have to accept less than the original deal called for, but that agreement didn't bind Manfred to start the season with no gate revenue. Vitrol rose in baseball's worst infighting since the 7.5-month strike of the 1994-95 wiped out the World Series for the first time in 9 decades. The union rejected the last proposal for a financial agreement, then finished protocols to play in the pandemic on Tuesday, and promised players will start reporting July 1 for a 60-game season scheduled to start on July 23rd or 24th, MLB's briefest since 1878. The focus here was on the day's wage for a day's worth of work, union head Tony Clark said during a separate interview with the AP. That's what we believe was fair, and that's why we maintained the position we did. To the view of many, the outcome left losers on both sides. MLB already has experienced 4 straight seasons of declining average attendance. In my opinion, it's a shame that the ramifications of this are going to be felt for a long time, said Cincinnati catcher Tucker Barnhart, the Reds player representative. I grew up a baseball fan. I am a baseball fan first, and I think it's awful that it has to go on this way. But I hope that getting out and playing will kind of mask some of the bruises that the game as a whole has taken over the last few months. MLB intends to start without fans in ballparks, even in places where the government and medical officials allow some spectators. Purdue Looks to Bounce Back by Kevin Brockway. West Lafayette, Indiana. Bad luck and an even worse defense contributed to Purdue struggling in its third season under head coach Jeff Broman. The Boilermakers went 4-8 in 2019, due in large part to a string of season-ending injuries, beginning with their best offensive player, speedy sophomore receiver Rondell Moore. Starting quarterback Elijah Sindelar went down for the season with a broken collarbone, while linebacker Marcus Bailey, the best defensive player on Purdue's roster, suffered a season-ending torn ACL. Bailey's injury proved to be the hardest to overcome, as Purdue's defense finished last in the Big Ten in total defense and 12th against the run of 192.5 yards per game. As a result, Purdue made a significant offseason change in its coaching staff, firing Nick Holt and hiring Bob Diaco as defensive coordinator. Diaco's impressive resume includes stints at Notre Dame, Nebraska, and Louisiana Tech. Last season, his defense at Louisiana Tech was tied with Alabama for 37th nationally against the run, allowing 137.2 yards per game. He is one of the most well-respected defensive coaches in the country and has proven throughout his career to be an innovator on that side of the ball, Brohm said in a release announcing his hiring. There were some bright spots last season, led by a pair of freshmen who emerged during an injury-filled campaign. Wide receiver David Bell earned Big Ten Freshman of the Year honors, finishing with 86 catches for 1,035 yards and 8 touchdowns. George Klarafis led all freshmen in the country in quarterback pressures, 55, and was tied for national lead in sacks at 7.5. Moore returning healthy from a hamstring injury will be a big factor for Purdue's attempt to return to bowl eligibility in 2020 after a one-year absence. The Boilermakers went to bowls in each of Brohm's first two seasons. Here's an early outlook for Purdue heading into the 2020 season. What they lost: Bryson Hopkins, a fourth-round NFL draft pick of the Los Angeles Rams, was one of the top receiving tight ends in the Big Ten last season, with 61 catches for 830 yards and 7 TDs. Before going down with season injuries, Sindelar passed for 978 yards and 9 touchdowns, while Bailey had 14 tackles and 1 sack. Newcomers to watch: our Malachi Carr is the most talented freshman in Purdue's 2020 class, a former basketball and football standout from Oak Park, Michigan, who at 6'5 and 225 pounds could evolve as either a threat at wide receiver or a pass-catching tight end. Purdue also dipped into the transfer portal to grab a pair of significant additions: UCLA quarterback Austin Burton and UConn safety Tyler Coy. Burton will compete with Jack Plummer and Aiden O'Connell for the starting job, while Coy, with 260 career tackles, will give the Boilermakers a solid run stopper in the back end of the defense. Another potential impact newcomer on defense is outside linebacker DeMarcus Mitchell, a JUCO transfer who had 71 tackles and 1.5 sacks last season at Southwest Mississippi College. And this is Berta signing off for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Have a safe and happy rest of your day.